Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. On today's podcast, we'll begin a discussion about how to create high-performance teams. Well, Andy, I remember the first time I heard you talk about this process for creating a high-performance team. And I remember you said the motivation for this material came to you as you really walked around our organization one Sunday.
Yeah, I had a couple of Sundays off, so I was visiting two or three of our different churches. And I just came at the normal time, got in the traffic, walked through the door. And, you know, for those of you who aren't in church world or local pastors, there's just something amazing about a volunteer-driven organization. Mm. And the church is the preeminent example because you show up at any, you know, especially medium to large church, and there are just people everywhere, and they all seem to know what they're doing and where they're going. It can be intimidating if you're a guest. And as I watched and I walked through the halls and I saw our greeters and I looked in the small group classrooms and I sat through the service and then saw the parking teams, I thought, this is just a beautiful thing to watch. I mean, I was proud of our church, proud of our churches. And then it dawned on me, you know, this works so well. I'm not sure why it works so well. Somebody were to stop me and say, hey, this is just amazing, Andy. How do you do this? Or how does your team, you know, create this kind of dynamic and generate this kind of organization around volunteerism? Mm. I would have to kind of stare up in the sky and say, well, I think the way we do it. And I thought, you know what? I want to understand why this works so well. So that sent me on a journey to really begin writing some things, thinking some things, asking lots of questions, brought a list of about 9 or 12 things to the leadership team and said, you know, I really want to understand why this works the way it works. Mm. And so that's what began this journey, and that's where this content comes from.
Andy, I remember when you brought that list to leadership team, we talked about it, we narrowed it down, and you came up with 4 essentials for what you say is to creating a high-performance team. But before we get to those, I do remember one thing. The importance of the timing of that day that you walked around, and that it was a time that you observed the organization when things were working really well.
Yeah, that was the thing. I wasn't trying to fix something. Yeah. I wasn't walking around going, oh my gosh, you know, we got work to do. I mean, we've always got work to do. The thing that motivated me was this. I thought, if this broke, I'm not sure how to fix it because I'm not sure I really know why it works. And so I tell leaders all the time, and we've talked about this on the podcast, if you don't know why it's working when it's working, you probably won't know how to fix it when it breaks. Mm. If you don't know why it's working when it's working, and the problem, of course, because we're so busy, we don't do an autopsy on success.
Right.
You know, when the machinery grinds to a halt or where there's a problem, we sit down and evaluate and reevaluate.
Exactly.
But evaluating success, especially successful systems, is so important. And Lane, as we've talked about before, the tendency is to default to personalities. Well, the reason that works so well is because of her. The reason that works so well is because of him. We have a great leader, or we've got great people.
Right.
And as we're going to see, people are essential to the success of any organization. But there are systems behind all great people that make all great people great. And so I wanted to dig, you know, get beneath the surface a little bit and look for the common denominators again, because if you don't know why it's working when it's working, you won't know how to fix it when it breaks. And it almost, not a sense of panic, but, you know, close to panic swept over me as I thought, this is so big, it's so complex, and I'm not sure why it works as well as it does. So again, as you said, I brought in my ideas, we began to talk about it, and for several, really 2 or 3 months, we just kept coming back at this saying, what makes a great team? And let's document it because we want to teach it. Mm-hmm. Because just because it's working well now, it's easy to lose sight of the driving force behind anything that's successful. And if you don't know what it is, you can mess with it and mess it up without ever knowing you've messed it up.
Well, that's great. And we're going to look at these 4 essentials. We're going to look at 2 this month and 2 on next month's podcast. So let's get right to the first one. The first one that you gave us was select performance-oriented people and position them for maximum impact.
That's right. Select performance-oriented people, position them for maximum impact. Now, before we dive into this, it's important for those of you in our podcast audience to remember this. We're talking about teams that are doing something together. This isn't the entire organization. We're talking specifically about high-performance teams because when I say select performance-oriented people, I mean we're trying to recruit doers, not just thinkers. Mm. And I'm all for thinkers. I love smart people. It's why we have the teams that we do. And it's why I try to surround myself with super smart people. But those of us in leadership know there's a little bit of a difference between a doer and a thinker. Mm. And when it comes to getting things done, need people who are oriented toward getting things done. So on a high performance team, it's important to recruit or in some cases hire doers, not just, you know, the philosophers in our midst who want to sit around and just think about things all the time. So when we're interviewing people for volunteer positions or employees as well, we always ask, what have you done? Not, you know, I see your resume, you know, I know where you used to work or what you, your degree, but what have you done? And if a person has a difficult time going beyond where they worked and what their responsibilities were, they can't point to something they've actually done, that's a little bit of a red flag. This may not be, you know, an action-oriented, you know, get-it-done-oriented kind of person. And again, I'm certainly not opposed to having smart people in the organization. In fact, I don't think there's necessarily a dichotomy between the two. I want super smart people who are action-oriented, but for sure action-oriented when it comes to a high-performance team.
Well, Andy, on that thought, one of the things we say around here a lot is that it's much easier to educate a doer than it is to activate a thinker.
That's right. It really is. I mean, anybody can get can learn more. Anybody can, you know, expand their understanding of their job description or develop a skill set. But a person who is not predisposed to action is probably never going to be predisposed to action. So again, we're talking about high performance teams. You need to recruit and hire doers, not just thinkers. Jim Collins, once again, has created some extraordinary terminology around this for us. And good to great, he says this, and this is one of my favorite quotes. If you have the right people on the bus, the problem of how to motivate and manage people largely goes away. Mm. And that's what we're talking about. When you think about creating a high-performance team, if you have the right person on the team, the whole challenge of motivating and managing people goes away. And then he says this, the right people don't need to be tightly managed or fired up. And we have both, Lane, you and I have both spent a lot of time in the past trying to fire up people who just aren't ever going to be fired up. I mean, they just are, they're just going to think about it. And then he says this, great vision without great people is irrelevant. Yeah. So again, this, you know, you think about high performance teams, it really does begin with the people that you choose. The people that you choose are far more important than the systems that you use. And so if you're going to have a high performance team, you've got to have people who are predisposed toward doing.
Jim Collins talked about the right people in the right seat, which is the second part of this idea that you position them for maximum impact.
Marcus Buckingham talks about the difference between playing checkers and chess with people. And people like me tend to play checkers. Everybody moves the same position, we're moving forward. The people who have intuition around this whole idea of making sure people are sitting in the right seat or place where they make their greatest contribution, they understand it's like chess, that not every player moves the same way and not every player on the chessboard has the same power. So hopefully in your organization, for those of you who are listening today, there is someone who just has intuition about placing people or putting people in a place where they make their greatest contribution. And when you find that person, you need to pull them in to the process of putting together high-performance teams because not everybody, you know, moves the same way, just like on the chessboard. Because of this, Lane, the org chart is not our friend. Mm. The org chart is like playing checkers. Actually, it's worse than checkers. It's like saying the first piece of plastic placed on the board has an advantage over all the rest. I mean, with all that in mind, the org chart is not your friend. I mean, the problem with the org chart is it's basically who got there first, who's been there longest, but not necessarily the person who is best positioned, you know, to play a significant role in a specific team. So in some ways, when it comes to putting together high-performance teams, you sort of have to ignore the org chart because it's always artificial. And sometimes it's actually a performance-limiting template because where a person is in the organization determines the opportunities that come to them.
Right.
And if you only pass opportunities down through an org chart, you're going to have, you know, especially in a large organization, some significantly talented people who could make a great contribution, and it's just going to take too long for them to, you know, work their way up to, you know, to really be able to shine. So when it comes to a team of people, putting together a team of people to do a specific thing, I think the person who's charged with the responsibility or tasked with that responsibility of putting together the team should have permission to look at the people who are the best players for what they want to do, regardless of where they are in the org chart. Mm. And that's messy, but you just get better performance. Again, it's putting people where they can make their greatest contribution.
Andy, I remember as you taught our staff this, the statement you made is your organization will be at its best when team members are doing what they do best.
Absolutely. Our organization's at its best when I'm doing what I do best. Mm. And so the organization's just at its best when everybody's doing what they do best, which means somebody has to have permission and authority to, you know, essentially ignore the org chart every once in a while to make sure everybody's, as Jim Collins says, is sitting on the right seat where they're making maximum impact. This is why, you know, several podcasts ago we talked about we encourage people to come up with an ideal job description. So to be able to say to their employer or to their supervisor, hey, I'm going to do exactly what you've hired me to do, but I just want you to know, if there's ever flexibility, here's where I think I can make the greatest contribution to this organization. There's not a secure employer, manager, division director, you know, franchise owner in the world who would not be motivated by an employee who says, again, I'm going to do what you've hired me to do, but here's how I think I could make the greatest contribution to your organization, your franchise, your department, your division. So sometimes I think these ideas can bubble up from, again, the action-oriented, you know, appropriately ambitious people within the organization. But somehow it has to happen to have a high-performance team.
Andy, I remember as you were teaching us this idea of selecting performance-oriented people and positioning them for maximum impact, you also stressed the importance of them understanding their interdependence as well.
Yeah, we call this connecting the dots. And this is the manager's responsibility, the leader's responsibility, the owner's responsibility to make sure that not only that you've got good people and they're in the right spot, they need to understand their connection to everybody else, not just on their team, but then the connection between, you know, each of these teams. And this becomes very complicated. And when you're in my position, it seems unnecessary because I sit at the top of the organization. I understand how all the dots connect. Mm. And so the tendency is to think, well, since I see how all the dots connect, everybody sees how all the dots connect, which nothing could be further from the truth because everybody comes to work to do their particular job.
Right.
So again, part of creating a team that's actually a team is creating a real sense of interdependence. This is where sports franchises have a huge advantage, right? I mean, they work together in the same space for a measurable short-term goal, basically outscore their opponent. They know exactly how they're doing against the competition because there's a scoreboard. Everybody on a sports team understands the importance and role of everybody else on the team. When somebody drops the ball, you know, literally or figuratively, everybody feels it immediately. Yeah. The sense of personal accountability is high. And on a sports team, collaboration is absolutely essential. It's not an add-on. It's not a nice to have. It's not a, oh, don't we have a great work culture. Mm. On a sports team, if there's no collaboration, everybody knows it immediately and the team loses. Well, all of those things are equally important for an organizational team. Mm. But because of the environment, we don't feel the importance of that. And once again, it's why those of us in leadership or management have to figure out ways to help people on teams understand the importance of collaboration and understand that teams are connected to other teams. But unlike a sports franchise, think about it. Our quarters are measured in months, not minutes. You know, we're in multiple locations oftentimes. The game never ends. It just goes on and on. It's oftentimes not always easy to measure a win. Mm. And even if it's easy to measure a win in one part of an organization, another part of the organization may not feel, you know, the euphoria, you know, of a win. There's no off season. We don't get to visit Disney for spring training, right? You know, in organizational life, somebody can fumble the ball today and we don't know about it for weeks or months. You know, we can be sloppy and carry non-essential underperforming personnel. In other words, you know, we can put as many people on the field as we want or can afford. We don't have to replace our catcher. And in organizational life, you can just put two catchers out there. So again, when it comes to team, you know, what we see played out on a sports field really is the accurate picture of a team. Then it becomes our responsibility as leaders to take that same sense of actual interdependence and make sure that we've actually created it. And if our org charts and our job descriptions are up to date, what's true of those teams really is true of us. There's actual interdependence. So assuming that we've done our job there, then the question comes, how do I help the people on the team feel the interdependence that a sports team feels? And again, it may not ever be, you know, to that degree, but to the degree there is a sense of felt interdependence, teams just do better because collaboration isn't an add-on. Collaboration is absolutely essential. Communication flow isn't a, hey, we're getting better. It's absolutely essential. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, Lane, just about everything in the corporate environment masks the reality of interdependence. Associates don't necessarily feel it even when it's true. And the reverse is true as well. In a poorly run organization, and this is where this becomes even more important, in a poorly run organization, the corporate environment actually camouflages the reality that there is no actual synergy. And anybody who's worked in a poorly run company knows there are people hiding. I mean, you know, they have job descriptions and they have jobs and responsibilities, but they don't work hard. They don't have to work hard. They can fumble the ball, and again, nobody knows, or they can cover it up. So in the corporate world, you know, some great things can be covered up. There may be actual synergy that no one feels, but at the same time, in the corporate world, a lot of non-synergy can be covered up, again, because of the nature of, you know, the corporate environment. So again, all of this comes back on us as leaders to make sure not only are the dots actually connected, but that people actually feel the fact that they're actually connected and that there is a sense of interdependency in order to get something done. Again, we're talking about a high-performance team. And on a high-performance team, there is an actual interdependence and people feel it.
Andy, I've noticed that when I've gotten this idea right, it really has eliminated a lot of the disagreement and conflict, or at least it's put us on the same side of the conflict.
Yeah, because on a real team, you're all competing together against the same competition, the competitor, as opposed to competing with the other people on the team. Mm. And if you're listening to this and you feel like in your division or department or wherever you work, you are competing against the people on your team, that's a big deal. That's a big problem. If you're a manager or a leader or, you know, you're an executive and you feel like the people on your team are competing with each other, again, that means to some extent their back is to the marketplace and they're facing each other rather than facing, you know, a common competition. So again, sometimes it's personality stuff, sometimes it's, you know, it can be a lot of things, but it's an issue that has to be addressed. Again, going back to our topic, if you want to create a high performance team. So again, this isn't just a nice to have. This is essential. It's essential for the culture because it increases collaboration. It's essential for productivity because, you know, information sharing flows much easier in an organization that's really functioning like a team. And again, as I mentioned, it keeps people's backs to each other facing the marketplace as opposed to turning around and competing with each other. Being better than the department two floors up does not make the company better. You know, again, competing within an organization, there's times to do that for awards and that kind of thing. But if overall the competition is within the organization as opposed to a group of people who are working together, you know, toward a common goal, again, that's just evidence that there's work to do in terms of creating a high performance team.
All right, Andy, just to review, the first essential you gave us for creating a high-performance team was select performance-oriented people and position them for maximum impact. The second essential for a high-performance team is clarify the what and why.
That's right. Going back to our sports analogy, every team, when they walk on a field, know exactly what they are there to do. They know what they need to do, and they know why they need to do it. And the same is true in organizational life, but it is much more difficult to do this in organizational life. But again, we're talking about high-performance teams. So everybody on the team needs to know what we've come together to do. In other words, what is the problem we're here to solve? What is the task we're here to accomplish? What's the opportunity that we're here to leverage? And then we need to understand why. And this is something that nonprofits are great at. Mm-hmm. This is something that, generally speaking, businesses are not good at when it comes to answering the question, why? Why is this important? And the reason the why question is important is because this is where people find their inspiration. Mm. And I talk to business leaders, whether they're in manufacturing or in sales, you know, they kind of look at me like, well, you know, this is just a job. I mean, we do know what we're doing, but isn't the why just so we can all make more money and eat and live indoors? And I'm thinking, well, that's part of it. But I think in every organization and in every division, every department within an organization, there is an answer to the why question that brings an element of inspiration. Just about everybody wants to think there is some purpose to work beyond making money. Mm. We're just designed that way. We're created that way. So when a leader, manager, division owner, you know, company owner sits down and wrestles with this question, and it takes some time. Okay, we know what we're here to do. Why is this important? Not just for the greater good of the individual or the organization, but is there a greater good even beyond this organization? Why is a vision of how the world might improve because of the work they're doing? Why should this problem be solved? Why should this task be accomplished? Why should this opportunity be leveraged? Pat McMillan, in his book, The Performance Factor, it's been out for several years, but it's a great book on team leadership. He says this, a clear, common, compelling task that is important to the individual team members. And that's the key. That's the why. Mm. It's important to the individual team members is the single biggest factor in team success. Mm. So he goes on to argue in the book that when an individual on a team understands why this is important, why are we doing this? Not just what, but why. He says it is the single biggest factor in team success. So it's not simply, hey, are we clear on the what? Being clear on the why, he argues, is the primary thing that drives team success. So I think we skim on this in the marketplace. Nonprofits, they understand the importance of why because in the nonprofit world, you know, profitability is tied to clarity around mission and vision. But I think even in the for-profit world, in the marketplace, there's generally an answer to the question why, and people love that because, again, that's where the motivation, the inspiration is found.
Andy, obviously, as you said, this idea of clarifying the what and why is inspiring, but there are other benefits as well.
Absolutely. When you clarify the what and the why, it focuses energy and resources. Mm-hmm. All of our leaders who are listening today, you understand the power of a goal. That's what a goal does. A goal focuses energy and resources. And in a sense, this is a goal. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. Clarity around what and why spotlights the superfluous initiatives and activities, you know, the sideways energy, the things that we shouldn't be doing anyway. I mean, we've all had that experience of, you know, standing up in front of a team and saying, this is what we're going to do. This is the direction we're headed in. And somebody raises their hand and says, well, then why are we doing that?
Exactly.
It's like, well, that's a really irritating question, but it's probably a good one. It's one of the reasons in our 3-month and 1-year evaluations that we give staff members here when they evaluate us, one of the questions we ask is there anything that you see that we're doing that seems off purpose? Mm. I mean, you've come to the organization with fresh eyes and you know what we're doing, why we're doing it, how you fit in, but is there anything we're doing here that you look at and go, huh, if this is the what, then why are we doing that over there? Yeah. So again, clarity around what and why puts a spotlight on all that stuff. And clarity around what and why, it really lays the groundwork for organizational change. And this is a really, really big topic. We've touched on this in the past because I would say 100% of the time when a leader asks me, how do I get my organizational leaders to change? Or how do I get the people that work for me to change? And then I say, well, before I answer your question, I have a question for you. You know, what are you doing and why are you doing it? You know, what does your organization do and why are you doing it? And if they don't know the answer to that, then again, trying to get people to change is pretty much a waste of time because the best place to begin any conversation about change is to talk about the future, what could be, what should be. And as a leader, you know, our responsibility is to make the people in our organization discontent with where they are by painting a compelling picture of where they should or could be. But you can't talk about the future until you've clarified what are we doing and why is it important. Or another way of saying that is people won't let go until you clarify where you want them to go. So again, trying to get people to change without a compelling picture of where you want them to go, it's a waste of time. And that's why high-performance teams always have clarity around what are we doing, why are we doing it, why is it important.
Andy, I think this is a great place to wrap up this month's podcast. But before we do, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I would say this. Like a lot of the things that we talk about on the podcast, this is difficult. This is challenging. You hear stuff like this. I know when I hear stuff like this, I think, oh, I just got another homework assignment. I got to go back and work on that. So it is hard. And I tell leaders all the time, if it feels hard, you're probably doing it right because leadership is difficult. It's wonderful, but it's difficult. So I hope you don't miss next month's podcast when we talk about the third and fourth critical component of creating high-performance teams.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for today. And to all our listeners, we want to thank you for joining us and invite you to the new andystanley.com website where you can find our new leadership podcast application guide to go with today's conversation. This application guide, found under the podcast tab, includes key takeaways from today's podcast, questions for reflection or discussion, resources discussed, and more. So be sure to check out andystanley.com today.